You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. While Tess is off to explore distant exoplanets, there's an ongoing search for extraterrestrial life much closer to home. Remember how we used to talk about Martians? Well, scientists are still searching the red planet for evidence of life, probably past, but possibly present. A new rover will head to Mars in 2020, and right now the science community is hashing out where it will land and what it will focus most of its attention on. Jack Mustard is a professor of Earth, Environmental, and Planetary Sciences at Brown University, and he's deeply involved in the process of selecting a landing site and planning the science the next rover will do. Jack, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Heather. It's great to be here.
I have to ask, why are we still holding out hope of evidence on life on Mars? I mean, we've got satellite maps. We've put multiple rovers up there. If there were life on Mars, wouldn't we have found it by now?
I think if Mars were teeming with life, we would have found it. But clearly Mars is not teeming with life. And to even imagine that it's teeming with life, I think is naive. So if you think about where we've looked so far. We've looked at a couple of places on the planet. We've taken some great instrument, but we've barely scratched the surface. And if I were a microbe living on Mars, I would not be on the surface, I'm telling you. I would be underground.
Well, and that's one of kind of two camps when it comes to thinking about where life would be most likely found on Mars. One is that it would be underground, and one is that it might be in areas that used to be lakes, used to be surface water. So are those two kind of, it sounds like you're in the underground category, those two are mutually exclusive?
Don't know if they're mutually exclusive, but I would say that would it be best to strategize the search for surface bodies of water, or should we perhaps imagine a different way to go about this exploration? And the surface of Mars for a long time has been cold, dry, and it is subject to quite a bit of radiation. So being able to get underground for a microbe would be a happier place to be. And I would say that the lake environments are certainly attractive because on Earth, that's where we find our earliest life. Evidence of earliest life was in places that used to be lakes. But we're on a different planet, and we should probably think about this in a different way.
So what is the purpose of the Mars 2020 rover? Is it really just the search for life, or are there other mission goals?
Well, this is a really good question. It is not necessarily even the search for life. What it is a rover that is to investigate a part on the planet that we think may have been habitable in the deep past, not yesterday. And I think that's one of the things I meant to bring up earlier, too, is that we're actually not going to search for the life that may be there today. I think most people feel that is a very difficult problem and not likely to be successful.
Why not, out of curiosity?
For the reasons that I indicated for the surface being quite inhospitable. And actually, that extends to many tens of meters into the subsurface, where the ground is probably frozen down to a kilometer depth. So it would be hard to live like a microbe or any kind of organism near the surface.
There are three possible landing sites currently being debated. Can you describe a little bit about each of those and what makes them potentially important for looking for evidence of past life or the possible presence of life in the past?
Sure. Those are there are three very interesting sites and very intriguing. The Columbia Hills site is one that we visited before with the Spirit rover, and that began in 2004. And why would we go back, you would say? Well, we would go back because there was a geologic deposit identified that at the time the scientists took note of. But since that time, some scientists, notably Steve Ruff at Arizona State University, has spent a lot of time to show that the geologic formation that was there has a lot of similarities to the kind of deposits we see in hot springs, in particular one in Chile. In hot springs, the deposits that are found there have excellent potential to preserve evidence of there being life, if there was life at the time. The other two sites are very close to each other, and there's a movement afoot that perhaps we could do just one landing and get the best of both worlds. One of the sites is called Northeast Syrtis, which is not exactly an intriguing name, but the Northeast Syrtis site is got an amazing diversity of rocks that allows us to investigate what's going on in the subsurface. And it has got excellent exposure that was due to this enormous, ginormous impact that formed a basin, and that created basically this huge drill hole that gives you access to the subsurface. And through that, we'd be able to investigate not only the potential of life in this life underground scenario, but it would allow us to gather rocks that date back to the earliest time of Mars's formation. The other landing site, called Jezero Crater, is a beautiful delta. And a delta is what happens when a river is carrying sediment into a standing body of water, like a lake, and it deposits that sand into a shape of a typically a triangular-shaped rock deposit called a delta, much like the Mississippi River does as it goes into the Gulf of Mexico.
And this is not a present-day delta. This used to be a delta, right?
Correct. As best we can determine, it was probably 3.8 to 4 billion years ago that it was actively forming a lake. And it is absolutely clear that there once was a lake here, because the water flowed into an impact crater, which is like a big bowl, and there's an outlet channel. So there's a channel coming in and one going out. So connect the dots. It had to fill up with water to a high enough point where it overflowed on the other side. So I have a couple of kids, and they're always trying to get my bathtub to fill up to that level, and I keep trying to stop them. But one day they'll probably be successful. But that's what happened at the Jezero crater, is it filled up all the way and spilled out over the end.
So what will the rover do once it gets to whichever of these sites ends up being selected as the landing site?
So it has two primary goals. One of them is to investigate the geology of the landing site, to understand the geologic context, the geologic history, and the stratigraphy of the rocks in there. And it has a beautiful suite of instruments to do that, both instruments on a mast to take camera pictures and to use a laser that can both determine the chemistry as well as the mineralogy, really interesting instruments. And then on the arm of the rover, there's a suite of instruments that can do the chemistry through the X-ray fluorescence measurements, as well as the mineralogy through what's called Raman spectroscopy, and high-resolution hand lens cameras as well. And through that combination of instruments, the second goal of the mission is to identify places to drill little core samples about the size of a pencil and encapsulate those cores into these incredibly nice, tight containers, seal them up, and prepare them for eventual return to Earth.
So this rover, unlike the previous rovers, won't only be taking pictures or doing a chemical analysis and sending back data. The idea is it will be preparing for actual physical pieces of Mars to come back to Earth.
Correct. It's going to make a cache or a deposit of these samples into, hopefully, a nice little container that somebody in the future will come back and pick up.
And there's also, I understand, a microphone that will be on this rover. We might actually get to hear what Mars sounds like.
Yes, I wonder what Mars does sound like. I think it might sound like wind blowing through the, won't be through the trees, but through the rover. But it also, I mean, there's additional instruments it's going to have on there as well. It's going to have this microphone, which will be fun. It'll have weather instruments, which is really important to continue our understanding of Mars. It's going to have something called a ground-penetrating radar, which shoots radar waves into the ground and then measures the reflection, the time of reflection, which can tell us the subsurface characteristics. And perhaps among the packages on this that has a lot of people really excited is it will have a helicopter. It will have its own drone. And this is a demonstration helicopter. We know that it can fly into the very thin Martian atmosphere, and the rover will drop that off really early in the system, move out of the way, and then for about the first 30 days of the mission, they will test out the helicopter and see if it works. And, you know, drones on other planets.
The process of picking a landing site for this new rover, I mean, this process started all the way back in 2011. It's down from 30 proposals to these three possible sites. What is that process? Where does it stand? And when will we have a final decision?
It's a really neat way that NASA's gone about this, which is to send out an announcement to the entire world saying, we are sending a rover. This is what the rover can do. send us what you think could be the best place to go from a scientific point of view. And from that, they down-select to fewer sites leading into the next meeting. That process goes on again, basically we've gone through two of these now, and there's one more meeting that they expect to have at the end of October or the end of September to basically look at these remaining three sites and really have a detailed science discussion.
Jack Mostert is a professor of Earth, Environmental, and Planetary Sciences at Brown University. Jack, thanks so much.
Oh, it's great, Heather. Great talking to you.
Up next, it's an alga. It's a squid. No, wait, it's a fish. The crazy story of one misidentified fossil, right after the break.